it's time. It is that time. Time for Styles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Styles and Chris Watkins.
Yes, yes, yes. Styles and Watkins on a Tuesday going up 400 on a Tuesday. Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports, 400th win for Coach Mike Brown as the Kings take care of business against the Cavs. And if you're wondering, yes, I was sitting next to Chris for that Donovan Mitchell unmasterclass.
Oh, yeah, you were.
And really, it was more of a masterclass about Keegan Murray putting the clamps on. In football now, the DBs are doing the strap, like the seatbelt, just like Dave said. Wear your seatbelts on National Seatbelt Day, but wear them every day. Had the straps on Donovan Mitchell. He really couldn't do much. And the shots that he did make were extremely tough. Tough shots, but that's what Donovan Mitchell does. And he hoisted up a ton of them. Mm-hmm. Most of them didn't go in. He was completely silent in the first half. Keegan Murray, can he be elite two ways? We got to talk about that. As the Kings win, a beam on a Monday. Again, to end our no case of the Mondays, a beam on a Monday.
Send it home.
132 to 120, the Kings get it done. Chris Biederman joins us, Candlestick Chronicles at 11. We'll talk about Brock Purdy or, Josh Allen. That question's not so crazy anymore. It was crazy about 2 months ago.
Yeah. Well, even 2 days ago.
Maybe even 2 days ago. It is not crazy anymore. We got some numbers to back that up. And it's the return. 11-15. It's been a while. What? Over a week,
It's been over a week, yeah.
11-15, the return of Beeman or Dreaming. Yes, it's that time as the Kings finish off a homestand and get ready to go on the road. Beeman or Dreaming at 11-15. We have our Truck Smart Drive of the Week. That's coming up at 1 o'clock as well. And our dog of the game. And Nate is behind the glass, so you know the dog of the game is going to be spicy. That's at 12:15. Loaded show for you today, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., as our shows align with the days. This is the only time I think this will ever happen in the history of the show. 14th show on the 14th day of the month. Continue that for the rest of the week. Good stuff. I don't know how we pulled that off, but we did. Chris Watkins.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, my guy?
Pretty phenomenal. I mean, you know, it was a great-looking beam last night. The Kings played, I think, better than what anybody, any of us could have anticipated about 24 hours ago. And, we even got the surprise of De'Aaron Fox entering that entering the lineup and entering the rotation. And that was just great to see. The Kings look like the Kings of last year. And it feels good to not really be stressed or, you know, anxious about this team anymore. I talked about that a lot last night after the game. Just the amount of anxiety heading into all of these games, just trying to figure out, okay, are they going to be okay, or is this going to be another performance like Houston where they just completely bottle it and look terrible and look like a shell of themselves, and we just continue to talk about how are they going to dig themselves out of this hole, or if they'll ever dig themselves out of this hole. And last night just felt cathartic. It felt like a spiritual experience almost, where they released all the demons. De'Aaron Fox comes back and they have probably their best game of the season. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a coincidence. It was great basketball to watch, and I can't wait to talk about it all day.
I don't even know where to start in terms of what we watched.
Ridiculous.
Right? And I think the best place to start would be the head of the Snake, and that's Mike Brown. I was in the post-game press conference, and a lot of people asked a lot of good questions, and he did a lot of reflecting back on his career with LeBron. He named off about maybe 25 players, possibly 30 players between the Cavs, the Lakers, the Cavs again, and now the Kings. So just really happy for Coach Mike Brown and that accomplishment. He said he didn't even realize it until the game was over, and they wanted him to get the DPOG crown and sit on the throne. And he said, what do you guys want? He was still kind of going over the game, still had the juices flowing. And they said, that was your 400th win. So he had no clue until after the game. And obviously everybody really happy for him, whether you've been in your career an elder statesman like a JaVale McGee or somebody really young in their career like Keegan Murray. I think everybody, and that picture heard around the world, throwing up the fours with the crown tilted. You can't even see his eyes. Insane. That is the hardest photo. That is the coldest photo I think I've ever seen from a coach.
Insane. I mean, Mike Brown just, he's the gift that keeps on giving. It's really incredible. We don't deserve him. I don't think anybody truly deserves the incredible memes or whatever, the moments, the moments that this man has created in just his short one and a half or one and some change tender, year tender. Like, this dude has brought the scream, the turn the Jets on last year, just all the excitement, the energy, putting his foot on the table and saying Malik Monk should be sixth man of the year. And then just what we saw last night with the crown was just, it was incredible. It's so funny. And you could feel, you know, like in the past, there's been, you know, coaches like Dave Yeager, who's just kind of a disciplinarian, someone who's not trying to be your friend. And then the Kings went through Luke Walton, who, you know, people kind of accused of being the opposite, where he's not much of a disciplinarian and definitely more of a vibes guy. And it feels like Mike Brown has that perfect balance of, he's a real human. Like, you can have real conversations with him, but you also respect him. Like, you definitely, he has that teacher, the authoritarian respect of these guys, of these grown men, but also understands how to relate with them on a real level and get the best performances out of them. He's really, it's incredible how perfect of a hire he was for this team. Like, we can't forget, you know, when the Kings were in their coaching search for Mike Brown, the three finalists were Steve Clifford, Mark Jackson, and Mike Brown. Yeah. And just how differently this team would have looked here today if they would have gone with either of those two other candidates. I can't imagine there being anybody else that makes sense for what this Kings team was trying to accomplish in Mike Brown. And I don't think anyone else realistically could have brought it to this point as quickly as Mike Brown has.
He's the cool dad that you still respect.
1,000%.
Because some cool dads, they try to be too much of your friend.
Yes.
Right? And then next thing you know,
it's like Mean Girls.
Right, exactly. Next thing you know, you try to discipline your kid and, hey, you're the cool dad, I'm not going to listen to you. I thought we were boys. No, I'm your dad. Mike Brown has that perfect balance, as you stated. And I don't even know if it's close. Mike Brown is probably the most entertaining coach in the NBA. And I don't even know who's second.
Yeah, I have no idea who, like Popovich, but for almost a completely different reason where he's like, you know, playing into how boring he can be sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's, because coaches almost take themselves too seriously. It's almost like, you know, we kind of see just such a counterbalance with Mike McDaniel, or Mike McDaniel in Miami, where it's like, those guys are just so, like, that's almost what the new age of coaching, if I had to imagine, that's what it's going to look like. It's going to be a lot more of guys like Mike Brown, guys like Mike McDaniel, who don't take themselves too seriously. It feels like coaching has always been one of those things where it's about how hard you can work and how serious you can be and how, you know, how seriously you can be taken by your players and respected by your others. And instead of just enjoying the game and having fun and understanding that these are humans that you're dealing with at the end of the day, and the best way you're going to get performances out of them is by treating them like actual people and not treating them like you are some authoritarian figure that's here to set them straight. Like, Mike Brown just understands the balance of it, and he really does feel like the perfect coach for this era or this new era of basketball.
And it's all about, life is about evolving. Because if you think back to Mike Brown, who coached LeBron, I don't know that he was like this.
No, he talks about that all the time, you know? The Warriors experience really changed him.
Right. So, you know, to be with the Cavs and to be with the Lakers and be with one of the best players of this generation in LeBron James.
Multiple. I mean, he was with Tim Duncan and David Robinson in San Antonio, then goes to LeBron, and then just casually hops over from LeBron to Kobe.
Yeah.
With the Warriors, maybe the best dynasty definitely the best dynasty of this modern era. Like, he's been incredible. Like, I don't know if there's anyone who's been more fortunate or more blessed to be in great situations that Mike Brown has.
Yeah, he's definitely up there with the Phil Jackson of the world, Steve Kerrs of the world. And the other thing is, you know, he understands greatness and he understands what it takes to be a champion. So to have that in Sacramento with this Kings team, I don't know what more you can ask for. Got to get to a break. When we get back, we will continue talking about how the Kings are back. Chris Biederman at 11. Brock or Josh Allen, we got that for you as well. Beaming or dreaming at 11:15. We're coming back with that Truck Smart Drive of the Week coming up as well. And the dog of the game at 12:15. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
And we back.
That Chance the Rapper. That is from Chris, by the way. We back.
Yes,
because
sir.
The Kings are back. The vibes are vibing.
Yes, sir.
We are feeling vibing good hard. About what the Kings have done, and it does seem like they have returned to form. Yesterday, we asked the question, will the real Sacramento Kings please stand up?
Please
stand up. And we said, look, you beat the Thunder, and it was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come out and lay an egg against the Cavs, we're going to start thinking, okay, still got some work to do. And they still have work to do.
Mm-hmm.
But to come out and to be firing on all cylinders, and I see you on the text line, 530. How about that Kevin Huerter, boys? I was there, and it felt like the arena ceiling was going to blow off when he started hitting those shots.
Man.
That is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
And you know what? Some people aren't very patient. I'm not one of those. I am one of those people. I'm not very patient. And I think a lot of the Beam regime or the Kingdom felt the same way.
Yeah.
You have these expectations. You have bad intentions on your mind after losing that game. Let's come out and let's show what we can do. Hold on. Let's get lathered a bit. Let's get some motion first. It's going to take a little bit. And then what do we have? We have Sabonis with 23, ho-hum, another double-double, one rebound away from a triple-double.
Another one.
What else do we have? Keegan Murray. Oh, not only am I going to bust out of my slump, it wasn't just a return of De'Aaron Fox.
Nope.
It was the return of Keegan Murray's jump shot.
Yep.
The return of the three-point shot from Keegan Murray. 5-for-8 from the field. 25 points. 9-for-13 from the field. Sorry. Three-point range. 5-for-8. 2-for-2. Free throws. And he put the clamps. He strapped up Donovan Mitchell. What else do we got?
What else?
The return of De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
The foxy one.
Come on.
11-for-20 field goals. 2-for-6 for three-point land. A plus 17 on the night.
Come on.
28 points.
Easy.
Yeah,
I thought he was hurt.
They asked him the post-game, hey, did you feel limited? Well, it didn't look like he was.
Yeah.
And he said, actually, he did feel it a little bit at times. He had to stretch it out a bit. And that's De'Aaron Fox, not 100%. And just to close it out, Kevin Huerter.
We saw
our first Kevon sighting, maybe second Kevon sighting. Of the season, 6-for-9 from three ball land, 20 points, 7-for-11 from field goals.
Mm.
Kevin Huerter returns. And I might not want to forget when you talk about the depth of the Kings, there's a guy a lot of people have had some thoughts about him.
Yeah.
He's been memed because of his great follow through, but it doesn't matter what it looks like as long as it goes in.
Exactly.
And Sasha Vezenkov,
come on
down.
Come on.
11 points, 3-for-5 from three ball land, and we might have a guy.
Might.
And everybody is competing defensively.
Mm-hmm.
They are feeling real good.
Yep.
And might I say, in the words of the book of Chance the Rapper, and we back.
Feels great, and it feels fantastic. Yeah, I mean, just what a coming out party last night, and it was so perfect with De'Aaron coming back. Everybody just seemed at ease. Like, it really did feel like everyone kind of took a breath, looked around, said, we got our guy back.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a great opportunity to just kind of to pounce, and they looked great, and it frankly really did all start with Keegan Murray locking down Donovan Mitchell. Yeah, he had 0 points at the end of that first quarter. He was 0-for-5, and at that point, the Kings got off to an incredible start. They were up almost 10 points at the end of that first quarter, and it set the tone. You know, we talked a lot yesterday about some of the paths for Cleveland to victory, and the clear and obvious one was Donovan Mitchell dropping 30-plus. We talked about how many points you had to hold Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell under. The Kings clearly had a similar conversation as well, where they understood Mitchell was going to have the ball in his hands a lot, and they were pretty much going to live and die with how he performed. And shout out Keegan Murray, man. I cannot believe it. After we saw in that Warrior game with De'Aaron Fox, the first game out for De'Aaron, he defended, he took the pressure of guarding Steph Curry the entire game. We saw his shot struggle because of it. tonight was the evolution, again, in real time for Keegan Murray, where you see him be able to defend the other team's best player for the entirety of the game. He guarded Donovan Mitchell for, I think, a total of 10 to 15 total game minutes, which is more than anybody else had to guard their single assignment for. Held him to 2 of 10 from the field. He just completely shut him down, made his life difficult all night long, and then, like you said, had a coming out party offensively as well. It was an incredible night, and we've been waiting. We have literally been waiting all season long for Kevin and Keegan to have a game where they both are hitting their threes, and last night was almost the ultimate example of that. The fact that they combined for 11 threes on, what is that, 14 shots? They were 11 of 14. Is that even right? No, that's not right. Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at
I know they combined for 11.
11 of 17 from three between the two of them. Just incredible, and that's... We've been talking about it, and it was getting tough to say, look, if they just make their shots, this looks a whole lot different. But this is a perfect example, almost an extreme example of if they hit their open looks, which, by the way, tons of open looks yesterday.
All day.
Endless open looks. I don't remember many tough shots that they had to take yesterday. Just so many open looks. They actually knocked them down, and they knocked them down and then some, to shoot just below 60% from the field, just below 50% from three. This is the kind of night that when they're clicking, when all things are clicking, it's almost impossible to beat this team.
Yeah, it is. And that's not to say they're going to shoot like this every single game.
No.
And we'll talk a little bit later in the show about what's repeatable and what's not. But what is repeatable is the defense. And what is repeatable is the effort that you can put out on defense. And what we saw from the Kings is that they are willing to do that. And if you're the Cavs, if you look here, all five of the Cavs starters are in double figures.
Right.
Right? The thing is, it's that bend but don't break mentality. And shout out Keon Ellis, or should I say Darrell Revis. You put somebody on Ellis Island.
Come on.
I think we got something.
Come on.
We put a guy on Ellis Island, and you're not going to have to deal with him anymore. So between him, between Keegan starting to elevate his game as a two-way. And I think defense is one of those things where if you're in the building, you feel it. If you're watching TV, you got the surround sound going, you feel it as well, because everybody is buying in. And you would say, oh man, all five of their guys got into double figures, but you limited all of them. That bend don't break. Mitchell only had 22. Garland only had 16. So Evan Mobley, I'm okay with your 16.
Totally.
Max Strus, I'm okay with your 19. We can live with it because, oh, by the way, on our side, we good on this side because we had four dudes not only in double figures, we had four dudes over 20 points or at 20 points. So if you combine those things together, the Kings, they're not going to lose very many games playing like this. Now, will they shoot like this every game? No. But if you defend like this, you're going to give yourself a chance. And we've been continuing to talk about, will the real Kings please stand up? We knew this is the first game where we saw their ceiling offensively.
Yeah.
Right? We knew how bad it could be. Mm-hmm. We've been watching how bad it could be. How good could it be? And this is what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Will it be at this level every single night? Probably not. Most likely not. But the fact that you can get here, and if you find some median that's closer to this than what we've seen the last couple games, you're going to be right where exactly where Coach Mike Brown thought that they would be, a team that is better offensively, maybe not as efficient, because efficiency is you would be tough to replicate what they did last season. But at the same time, we are going to be better defensively, and we'll get those defensive ratings for the Kings. Because they ain't, what were they last year, 21, something like that, 22, 23?
They might have even been 24.
They were in the 20s,
They're
not there anymore. So if you continue to play offensively and you get into the teens, and the way they're playing defense, they could be better than the teens. Mm-hmm. They could be 12, they could be a tween, right? They could be 11, 12 years old, something like that. So I'm really excited from what I'm seeing from the Kings. I know it's only one game. We'll see if you can take this defense on the road, but they feel invigorated. They feel like they got a pep in their step, and that's what they needed.
Yeah, I just want to throw three quick numbers in here before we head to break. One, three of the four games the Kings have now played with De'Aaron Fox, where he's been involved in the lineup, the Kings have scored 130-plus. So when we talk about, is this sustainable, what looks different, what is the key, it's very clear that when De'Aaron Fox plays – we already knew this. We witnessed this the past three games, but this team goes to a whole nother level, and it's almost effortless. You'd almost don't even I think we took it for granted with De'Aaron out there, because even in those first two, or you know, in three or two of those first three games, the Laker game and the Jazz game, I wouldn't say that the Kings were clicking, or it didn't feel at any point like it felt yesterday. And so the fact that they can get to 130 almost effortlessly with De'Aaron in the lineup, incredible. Number two is the Kings are now 5-4, which puts them first place right now in the Pacific Division. The Warriors have lost three straight. That was definitely something I wanted to notice. And last number I completely forgot. So let's go to break.
Well, we will definitely, we'll talk about the Warriors a little bit when we get back, because when the Kings get back from their road trip, they're going to have to face the Warriors. But at the end of the day, how's the weather down there to the rest of the Pacific Division?
Come on.
Because it feels good up here.
Feels great.
It feels great. Got to get to a break when we get back. Again, we have Chris Biederman at 11. We're going to switch it up. We know he's Candlestick Chronicles, but Chris Biederman was in the building. So we're going to talk Kings with him as well. Beaming or dreaming, 11:15, dog of the game at 12:15. Sal and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, 10 a.m., 2 p.m. If you are just now joining us, thank you for joining. If you've been listening, thank you for rocking with your boys. We got you 10 a.m., 2 p.m. every day, 14th official show. And it's a good one. Chris Biederman at 11, Candlestick Chronicles. But we also got some Kings going with Chris as well. He was in the building. We were hanging out. So we will talk shop with the Kings about the Kings. Brock or Josh Allen, that's a little bit later in the show. Beaming or dreaming, 11:15, our Truck Smart Drive of the Week at 1 o'clock, and our dog of the game at 12:15 as we break down the Kings' win over the Cavaliers. A great win and against a great team in the Cavs. I mean, I know you talked about the Cavs just very shadily going down to the Knicks in the playoffs. Yeah. But on paper, what did we talk about? A team that's long and a team that's also quick, because you got the two quick guards. It's a really well-built team.
Yeah.
And we talked about the importance. And I think the biggest thing with the Kings is being able to shoot when you know you have to shoot.
Yes.
Chris and I on this show talk a lot about playing pickup. I don't know when I'll be back due to my Achilles, but I will be. We on the way. Got to keep that physical therapy back. No, we solid. And when you're shooting and you understand we're probably going to get the rebound, we're a better team, you shoot more effortlessly, right?
Sure.
And a lot of times, those are the balls that go in.
Mm-hmm.
When you're facing a team where you know, hey, we got Sabonis, but they got two trees down there, so with Jared Allen and Mobley, so we really got to be on our P's and Q's and make these buckets. So for the Kings to know that and be, after struggling, right? Kevin Huerter had a breakout game last game, but after struggling, if you're Keegan Murray, if you're some of these guys that have had a rough, Malik Monk 3-for-5, and he was struggling from three ball land. So to understand the stakes, and we talk about the yips, and we talk about how a lot of this is mental, because you'll sit there and watch Kevin Huerter and Keegan Murray make 15 threes in a row in practice. And some of these shots are so wide open, it's basically just like practice, but you're not hitting them. So to be able to come out to understand we have to make these open shots because the lane is closed for business, just like you're driving on 80 or 5 North on the way home at 12 at night, that's what really stuck out to me. And the last thing I will say is this, Chris. One thing that was really important, we were sitting next to each other. I didn't say anything to you because I talked too much when watching the game. I know you got post-game. You did a great job on post-game, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to make sure that you're focused. That first three-pointer by Keegan Murray in the corner where he pump-faked.
Yes.
We actually did talk about this.
Yeah.
And he bricked it. And we said, just shoot it. He's thinking too much.
Yeah.
He didn't do that again. And I wonder, I didn't ask him last night because so many people had a lot of questions. I wonder if somebody said something to him, or I wonder if he just said, you know what, I got to just let this thing fly.
Yeah.
And after that, he did not do that again. Mm-mm. And I do wonder if something happened, because he almost
I think he gathered himself to almost try and make it like a, okay, I have time, let me relax and shoot. But a lot of the time, like you're saying, like a lot of the times when you're in the flow state, that's the best time to take the shot, is when you're in rhythm. And when you slow it down and take that moment to gather yourself, you know, some people will take that little side dribble
right.
and gather it back. You just, that's when you think about it. That's when the thoughts start to, it's like a golf swing where, you know, you want to be thinking about as few things as possible.
Yes.
And then the second you think, okay, clear your mind, that's when my knees, my, where's my ball position,
right,
all that
right.
stuff.
Lock the elbow
yeah,
out.
Lock the, okay, make sure this is the most picture perfect jump shot possible. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that you always, always miss. And,
yeah.
And that's a fantastic point because after that, yeah, you saw no hesitation in his shot at all. And yeah, if you take that 1-3, his first three off the board, he hit six of his next eight. So he clearly found some sort of rhythm. And I do think that a big part of it was Mike Brown probably yelled at him and said, stop hesitating and just trust yourself.
Yeah.
Just play basketball and don't make it any more difficult than it needs to be. Because frankly, I'm sure they all felt the relaxing presence of De'Aaron as well, where it's not there's not as much pressure to make this one shot too. Because like you said, when you're playing pickup and you know, like you get the offensive rebound or you just know that you're a better
yeah.
team than the one you're going against, you play a lot more free. But the second you feel the pressure of, oh, if I don't make this, like we need me to make this or else, you know, who knows if we're going to score enough points tonight. If I don't have it, you know, all those thoughts are going through your head. It's just a different way of playing the game, and it's not something anybody can notice either until you know you look at the numbers after the game. So definitely, I think I'm gonna. It might not be fair, but I'm gonna attribute that as well. I'm gonna attribute all the shooting last night for the most part to De'Aaron Fox being there and just the calming presence and the fact that the team knows that. Look, we have our superhero out there and we're at full strength. So if I can just contribute my tiny part, no longer does it mean Kevin Huerter has to play well or else this game's not going to go in the Kings' favor. They can play with a little bit more freedom.
We're feeling so good that even though Beamin' or Dreamin' isn't until 11:15, we are going to open up the phone lines right now, 916-339-1140, if you want to be a part of the conversation. We see the texts rolling in. We see the calls rolling in as well. But, Chris, you had a crazy stat about Keegan Murray
Man.
That I wanted you
yes.
to get to.
Yes, the stat I forgot, the third thing I
right,
forgot
right.
Before we went to break was the Kings are now, after last night's, 25-point performance from Keegan Murray, the Kings are now 14-1. In games in which Keegan Murray scores over 20 points.
That's crazy.
I mean, that just tells you, much like, you know, me and I always point out the fact, me and Frankie always talk about when Harrison Barnes plays well, the Kings tend to play well. When Keegan Murray can get over 20 points in a game, mm-hmm. that usually means, again, much like last night, Sabonis probably is also hovering around 20. De'Aaron, more nights than not,
yeah.
is going to be significantly above 20 as well. It's just that extra scoring punch that the Kings need to be this explosive offense that we saw last night and we know they're capable of. It just does so much for, again, spreading the wealth. I heard De'Aaron in the postgame yesterday talk about how, you know, their offense really isn't built around Fox getting 40,
right.
Sabonis getting 20, and then just hoping for contributions from someone else. They spread the wealth truly, and I think that number is a really good sign of when they're spreading the ball out at their best, when they're getting their third scorer involved and getting him scoring,
mm-hmm.
the team just is so, so tough to beat because of you only have two eyeballs, you only have 2 feet, you only have 2 hands, you can
right.
only guard one guy at a time or put your focus on one guy at a time. If you're worried about De'Aaron Fox driving, but he also has Sabonis down in the post, but also has Keegan Murray in the corner, but Kevin Huerter up top, oh yeah, and Harrison Barnes or Malik Monk in the other corner, that's just too many things to try and keep
yeah.
keep contained and keep stopping. You have to pick your poison. So, again, I just think that number is a really good showing of how dangerous this Kings team is when they can get multiple guys scoring, not just their two guys that we all expect it from.
Right, right. And later in the show, we're going to talk about how the Kings stack up in the West because, like you said, some teams have already played 11. The Kings have played 9.
Yeah.
So we're around that 10-game mark. We will do a full breakdown
yep.
after the game in L.A. because that will officially be their 10th game. But we do want to talk about how they stack up in the West because We talk about ceilings with the Niners and how good the Niners look
yeah.
when they hit their ceiling. This is the first time I believe that we saw the ceiling
right.
of the Kings, and it looks darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like something that when we were discussing Beamin' or Dreamin' initially, or when you were at Media Day with Whitey and the question was, hey, championship, or what are your thoughts? Are you just trying to be better? And every team wants to be a champion. Every team wants to talk about being a champion. But this was the first time you saw the Kings and you could put them in the conversation of, I don't know if it's going to look like this every day.
Right.
But if it looked close to this,
yeah,
they definitely are a contender.
If they can play like that 4 of 7 games.
Right, that's it.
That's it. That's all it takes.
That's it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That was the problem with last year. That's the recipe that we saw how this Kings team could play for the majority of last regular season, and I think that's what made the playoffs so frustrating was I really still contest that there was only one game where I felt like the Kings looked like their regular season game, mm-hmm. and that was Game 4 in which they lost to the Warriors anyway. I think that was 126-125. That was the Harrison Barnes missed three game. So, like, this is exactly what the Kings want to do, to your point. I was looking at the numbers so far this season. This is the first time all year the Kings have shot above 50% from the field, period. Their previous high was 47% against the Lakers. Also the first time they've shot above 40%, or even 37% was their highest mark before this in Game 1. So last night, again, is the exact example, again, to the extreme, but that's an example of what the Kings want to look like. They want to shoot above 50% from the field. They want to shoot somewhere near 40% from three. And can we just not talk about free throws? I'm so glad that free throws didn't come into the game yesterday, but De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, if they're going to continue to miss free throws at the rate in which they have so far this season, more specifically Sabonis, the Kings are going to lose so many games that they don't need to lose. Last night, they missed 8 free throws, shot 63%. Sabonis was 6 of 11 from the free throw line. Those are the kind of things that can end up getting you messed up on a night where you shoot 60% from three.
Right.
You shoot almost 50%. You can't leave it open and miss that many free throws. And imagine how many points the Kings would have had if they hit those free throws. We're right. talking about 140 to 120 at that point.
Yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. And I don't even know if keep an eye on is the right term because no. we know it's an issue.
That's the thing.
The question is, are you going to be able to fix the issue?
Is it going
to
hurt you? Is it ultimately going to be the death of you? Like, yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, last year I talk a lot about the Knicks game where the Knicks got tons of offensive rebounds, but the Kings ended up winning, and it was a sign of what was ending up going to be the death mm-hmm. of this team was offensive rebounding. And it's just kind of had that feel that with the amount of free throws they've missed, and I know they practice, tons of people say, oh, why don't they just practice free throws? How's Dwight Howard a 50% free throw shooter? These guys practice free throws. It's quite literally one of the only things we see in the media mm-hmm. when we go to practices is they do this free throw drill, and if you miss, then the entire team runs a gasser, and then you have to take the second free throw. It's one of the only things we actually see them practice, and they still can't hit free throws. It just makes me nervous that at some point they're going to lose some games, hopefully not playoff games, because of the simple fact that they can't make free throws. And we've seen it here in Sacramento. You know, Shaquille O'Neal, we had to go against Shaq. We definitely implemented the hack-a-Shaq rule. Uh-huh. If Sabonis is going to continue to shoot near 50% from the free throw line, people are going to start fouling him at the end of games, and it's going to become like a Ben Simmons situation where you have to wonder, do we take this guy out in crunch time because people are just going to foul him?
Yeah, and what I think the whole hack-a-Shaq thing was a bit frowned upon, but how they do it now is we're just going to make sure you don't get the shot up, right?
Yes.
So if you're down in the paint, we're just going to foul you nice and healthy.
Yeah, just grab you, wrap around
right,
you.
And you can go to the line and have fun at the line because it's a very lonely place. So something to keep an eye on. But the vibe is still back, and they still
vibes
got the
great.
W.
Incredible.
And until it does cost the Kings a W in a prime time in a very important game, we'll just have to wait and see because that's really all we can do. Got to get to a break. When we get back, we will talk about championship windows. The Bills, they got dangerous last night.
Yikes.
And the question now is their window closed? And we will pull that back to the Niners and the Kings. Chris Biederman at 11 o'clock and Beamin' or Dreamin' at 11:15. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Talking all things Kings. Got some a little bit of Niners for you as well. Because, by the way, they're rolling too. It's good to be in Sacramento right now.
Great.
Enjoying good barbecue like I did on Sunday. I got to be cool, though. I got to be cool now, though, because, you know, we're not going paleo, but we're going semi. We're chilling a little bit.
Okay.
Now that we're fully moved, there's no more excuses. We got to chill in the takeout.
So what's getting restricted? Again.
So, for example, like we'll make a pasta, like my wife made a pasta last night with the low carb pasta and ground turkey for the meat. That's like what we do. Now, I got to still not have three helpings because that destroys it. Yeah. But that is it. And I think the rule is you're not supposed to eat after the 12-hour mark. So if you wake up at 7 a.m., you're not supposed to eat again after 7 p.m.
Is that intermittent fasting? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Okay. Like Terry Crews, that's how I get down.
Okay.
When I get down, I get down.
You're trying to get
like Terry Crews.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying he is probably one of the most famous intermittent fasters.
Ah.
Where did you get barbecue from? Did you do it yourself?
Yeah, no. So Joe Giroux, our own Joe Giroux, responded to my Alan Asks Q&A on Twitter. Thank you for all the responses. And he came through with Urban Roots. So that's where I went.
Good. Yeah.
It was fire.
Okay,
so
cool.
It was fire. So keep them coming. I'm trying to think of my next question. Maybe I'll ask you, Chris. It's not going to all be food.
Right.
Right? It's going to be once I'm back hooping, you know.
Where are the good courts?
Where are the good courts, right? Best sushi. Yeah. Things like that. So be on the lookout.
It's not at all.
Of course, Nate, you can hop in as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hop into the win column. Okay. And that's what the Kings did, winning 132-120. But I did want to pull this around, Chris, so basically when we're downstairs in the media room, they have other games on. So we're watching the Broncos. And for some reason I was in a Russ We Trust mood. I was trolling everyone
about
Russell Wilson. And it turned out because they won.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, I had nothing on the game, nothing like that. And the Bills, we literally watched that last play. It's when the third quarter had kind of just started to where the Bills had 12 men on the field. The Broncos missed the kick, and then they get to re-kick. I don't know why the Broncos did the kneel and didn't spike it. I think he was just trying to get the hash mark, I'm guessing. So that's what they did. And you talk about the Bills, and now Stephon Diggs' brother, Trayvon Diggs, is saying, get him out of there. I don't know where Stephon would go because he needs the ball so much. So if you go to the Raiders, you got Davante Adams. Yep. You go to the Eagles, so I don't know where he would go.
I think he should just play quarterback.
Right. You go to the Cowboys, and you got CeeDee Lamb, so you're not going to be happy, Stephon.
No.
And the question becomes, and a little later we'll talk Josh Allen and Brock Purdy, and the question being asked around national media is the Bills' window closed? And I still talk about, I think we talked about it at dinner yesterday, if they win that coin flip,
who knows?
Because they might beat the Bucks. Mm-hmm. We'll never know, right? But the question now is that window closed? And pulling it back to the Kings and Niners, that is why it is so important to take advantage. Not that anybody's trying to lose, but when you have that window, you got to act. And I know this is not a day where sorry to the trade generator fans.
We love y'all.
This is not a day for the Kings trade generator. There will be plenty of days for that. Hopefully not too many.
Yeah.
But today is not that day.
No, I've been working some things up, though.
Oh, my goodness. He's been cooking. He's in the kitchen cooking. So when you talk about the Niners and you talk about the Kings and you say, okay, how is this? How this window, it's not that open. I would say it's much more important for the Niners than the Kings at this point in time. Yeah. But it just can close so quickly.
For sure.
The Raiders and the Bills have the same record.
It's insane.
In the year of 2023.
I would throw up all over the place. When I saw that last night, I legitimately could not believe it. The fact that the Bills and the Raiders are sitting at both at 5-5 right now. If that doesn't sober you up as a Bills fan, I don't know what else will. But to go to the Niners thing in the Kings championship window talk, I feel like if you are the Kings, like, I love how the Niners have approached their championship window. Like, just the way that how aggressive John Lynch has been in acquiring guys like Christian McCaffrey, and then we see him, you know, bringing even something as small as Randy Gregory, and then again, of course, with Chase Young, just never being satisfied. Mm-hmm. I really think I talked about it when the deals happened, but you know, every GM talks about, we always want to keep flexibility. Monty talks about that all the time, wanting to keep flexibility at all times, never feeling satisfied, always feeling like you can make tiny adjustments on the edges and what that can do for your team. A lot of people talk about it, but not many people are actually about that action, especially not in football where the trade deadline is nowhere near as active.
You're
as
not
in
about
the
that
NBA.
Life, yeah.
John Lynch has been about that life and then some, just with how seriously he's taking this championship window with, and also Jed York as well. Like Jed York had to fork out all that money to make the Bosa contract a thing. He paid Trent Williams. Now, is his negotiating style the most conducive to a happy locker room? Maybe not at all times. He definitely, you know, likes to drag those talks out as long as possible, and then eventually the players end up getting the money they ask for. But it just with how seriously and how much attention to detail they have given the building of this team, and truly, again, just never being satisfied. I think it's the fact that the Niners have just reached the NFC Championship so many times and the Super Bowl a couple of times and just not been able to taste victory. That lack of satisfaction, I think, has driven them. But I just hope that the Kings take note of that. And you know, I think we're seeing it right now is kind of where – you know, we're starting to see, is Harrison going to be somebody who, you know, the Kings realistically should have on their team for the next 3 years? Should they look to make some upgrades, maybe take another step a little bit closer towards all in? I just hope that the Kings and Monty McNair more specifically really always looks at making this team better and never really settles. And I think we saw that with the Sabonis trade, but, you know, it's about the next one you make, because there's always things that have to be tightened up. And again, I just think John Lynch has done a fantastic job of kind of being the model of always addressing your team's needs and never just saying, we'll figure it out, or, you know, I think we're good enough, or we have enough talent already at that position. You can always add if you're not satisfied.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, we've been trying to be extremely positive, right, about the Kings, because there's nothing to not be positive about. But if you are looking for a negative, and we're not going to play the game because we're not trying to be disrespectful. We're trying to have a good time here after a big Kings win. But yes, Harrison Barnes played 22 minutes, which his minutes are going down, and that's probably based on the lack of production. He had 4 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists. And you bring up that name, because at this point, you have no choice, right? You have no choice, because when everybody else is, if you look at the box score, it's fully loaded, right? It's like when you go get a burrito or something and you're looking for, okay, I got a ton of meat, I got a ton of beans, I got a ton of rice, I got my salsa, but you ask for sour cream and you can't find it. And then the last couple bites, you taste some sour cream and you say, okay, I can't complain to them.
I guess they had it in there.
I guess they did give me sour cream. That's what it seems like now with Harrison and Barnes. So not to be negative, but there's no other way to look at this and think, okay, if there is an issue, if there is something missing, this is it.
No, for sure. And again, I'm not gonna come up with specific trades or anything, but it's just as simple. It doesn't really even have to do it. He's more the obvious selection because of how well the other players are producing. But I mean, you just look at it, at the guys who you could view as a little bit more expendable, and he's just a name that really sticks out. And I think after last night's DNPCD, you could say the same about Davion as well. I don't think it's necessarily talking bad about them. It doesn't really have to do with them as much as it is, again, more so for this team. Somebody's got to go if you want to bring in a piece, and those are just the pieces that I think have the most value, but also don't take away from the things that you're currently really good at.
Yeah, and a little bit later in the show, we'll talk about the road back for Davion. We have some quotes from Coach Mike Brown about Davion and how he can get back into the mix. Here's a quote from our own, not from Brendan Nunez, but this is from his Twitter, because he was with Coach Brown in the pregame press conference on Harrison Barnes. And a quote right here: he allows us a lot of versatility, especially defensively. We need it because we're a young team. We're not that big. I like what I've seen so far. It's early in the season. I think last year he struggled at the beginning of the season too. Close quote. That is Coach Mike Brown on Harrison Barnes. Mm. So that's how he feels right now.
I think he's a veteran. Okay.
He's a veteran.
Yeah.
Okay. And at some point.
That's not good enough, I don't think.
Well, I was going to say, the thing is, as this team continues to mature, how much do you need a veteran?
Exactly.
Right? To me, I mean, and we saw, look, like I said, you know, I was in the Bay. Yes, it's not aging that great, but I had a pool party shirt, right? Mm. At Jordan Poole. It's a mess in Washington. I don't know if you saw that clip going around in the timeout where he's throwing his towel, he's dropping F-bombs. It's just not great. And that is a guy who needs maturity, right? This Kings team is not immature. They don't need, to me, a veteran to say, hey, stop doing that. Doesn't seem, they have fun in the locker room, but if you were to think of a not a class clown, but somebody like that, when you think of immature, I think of, that's why Fred VanVleet, and I know Dylan Brooks might not be the most mature guy, but he is a veteran.
Yeah.
That is what I think. Hey, Jalen and the crew in Houston, y'all, this is not AAU anymore. Right. You're not hooping for whoever is in the stands, right? We need to be a real basketball team. That team needed veteran leadership. Veterans. Okay. Yeah. The Kings, to me, they do not need veteran leadership.
Yeah.
Not if that veteran leadership is not coming with production.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is you can get veteran leadership for a vet minimum. Like you can get JaVale McGee can give you veteran leadership. Yeah. You don't have to pay $17 million.
Get Rudy Gay.
For
get
leadership.
Rudy Gay to just kick it on the bench.
Exactly. And that's the thing is like, I mean, that's again, I hate to make turn this into a negative Harrison Barnes conversation, but here we are. That's like kind of what frustrated me about the playoff series last year is that Harrison Barnes is brought to be the guy who says, it's okay, guys. I know everyone's nervous. I've been here. I've done that. Let me tell you or show you even better about, you know, how you can handle yourself in this kind of situation. And frankly, I mean, I wouldn't say that he brought that to this team. I think Harrison still kind of views himself, even though he is the elder statesman of this team, I don't think he really views himself yet as that, oh, let me teach you young fellas about the game here. I think he still views himself, and I think rightfully so. He's 30 or 31 years old. He still views himself as in his prime as well.
Yeah, and it might be a lot of off-the-court stuff. Like, Harrison's going to tell you, hey, invest in this and don't spend your money on shoes.
Yeah, wear a suit to the game.
Right. Don't buy a bunch of cars. That's how he's going to help you. We got to get to a break. Chris Bearderman coming up, Candlestick Chronicles here at 11. But we are going to talk some Sacramento Kings with him as well. And the thing is this, you don't need production from Harrison Barnes. Nobody wants to talk about it today. If your other four starters are shooting over 20 points. Mm-hmm. But how often is that going to happen? Got to get to a break. When we get back, Chris Bearderman, Candlestick Chronicles at 11. Beaming or dreaming, 11:15. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.